Ladies and gentlemen, I have the honor to present to you the very distinguished Prime Minister of Israel, Her Excellency Golda Meir.
My friends, I think I was throughout this month, which seems like a century, somehow I didn't break down, not for one moment. You've almost caused me to do it now. Every one of us at home has to recall, is it really only 1 month? But that's what it is. Exactly a month ago, I left for Strasbourg, where I was invited to the European Parliament to present the case of Israel. The day before that, the Prime Minister of Austria declared that the Chișinău camp, transit camp for Russian Jews, is to be closed down, because two terrorists entered the train from Czechoslovakia to Austria and held three Jews and an Austrian as hostages. The terrorists were sent away free, and the camp was supposed to be closed down. So from Strasbourg, I went to Vienna to plead the case of the right of transit for Jews that, after unthinkable and indescribable heroism and preparedness to go through all kinds of suffering, they eventually were on their way to Israel. It was not the greatest joy that I had in my life. I came back Wednesday night to report to the cabinet that I evidently failed in my mission. Saturday morning, we were at war. The war really broke out at 2 o'clock. But early in the morning, at 4 o'clock in the morning, we had definite information that war will take place on both borders, Syria and Egypt, simultaneously. We had to take a very serious decision that carried with it a terrible responsibility. We knew that within a few hours, our men on both sides of the border, north and the south, will be facing the tanks and MiGs and the missiles with which these two countries were well provided by one of the two greatest powers in the world. The Chief of Staff came in to describe to me what the advantages would be if we would make the first strike. I'm sure you appreciate it wasn't a simple decision to make. I took the decision, which was later supported by the entire cabinet, that knowing exactly what the decision means, this decision we will abide by. For a very simple reason. We knew that after a war, on the battlefront, comes another battle on the diplomatic front. We had no illusions. We knew this would not be a simple war. We knew not only whom we were facing, we knew what we were facing. The men that do the shooting are Egyptians and Syrians. But the mass of material that they have, the tanks, the missiles, the guns, the MiGs, in huge numbers, this was Russian. And we knew that when the battle would be over and the dead counted and the families notified of husbands, sons, and to a very large number, grandsons this time. And the number of maimed. When all this is over, we will have to face the world, the good world, civilized world. And we will be taken to account why the first strike. Why didn't we wait? Maybe if we had waited, maybe all this was just a show and it would never have happened. And I support 100% what your chairman just said about the action of your President and Secretary of State. But we have a Europe that is neutral. And we have a country whose Mirage planes were trying to shoot down our planes. They were transit from Libya to Egypt, coming from France. We had an embargo in England. And we feared that confrontation with the world after the firing will have stopped. I think we judged rightly. We paid for it. But I still believe that this was the right decision. During the war, we were in need of replacement of tanks and planes and other war material. We got it from your government. I said last night at a dinner with members of your government present that I believe for generations, children will be told of the miracle of those immense planes from the United States landing every 15, 20, 30 minutes and bringing in the material that spent life to our people. I don't know whether it would have been so simple to get it had our decision on that Yom Kippur morning been different. This was the cruelest wars of all. The Egyptians and the Syrians have been well provided. They have been trained in the best of Soviet school of wars, how to conduct wars. They have been trained in sending thousands of soldiers, practically suicide groups only in the thousands. Only countries that have no worry about the life of their soldiers can follow a military tactic of that kind. The first few days, as you well know, were very bitter days. Days and nights that had nothing to do with what we ordinarily know. So many minutes in an hour, so many hours in a day, so many days in a week. All this was thrown out of mind and heart. It was one big dark night for the first several days. If anybody needed proof how right we were since 67, in our intransigence, in our obstinacy of not moving back to the 67 borders, maybe this will have convinced it. The first two or three days when the Syrians overran the Golan Heights and were practically on their way down to the valley, down to those kibbutzim that before 67 they shelled from above and saw all these at their mercy almost. Maybe people around the world will realize now that it's not exactly the desire of expansionism that dictated to us that we remain on the Golan Heights no matter what. Not for that piece of territory, but for the life of our people, for our very existence. Had they come down below, where would they have stopped? Same is true of the Egyptian border. If we had moved back to the 67 border, and all this mass of destruction and death had been at the 67 border, where would our Negev be? Where would Tel Aviv be by this time? The Egyptians, of course, have a simple explanation how things turned when the American flyers came in, when your Air Force came in and took over, naturally. How does Sadat say? He said, I can't fight the American army. He's modest, after all. But he had no American army to fight. Everybody knows that, and he knows it. My friends, in all the wars, beginning in 48, 56, 67, 69, and again 73, we knew that we owe our existence to the spirit, which I wouldn't dare even to add one word to describe it, of our boys. Never was it as evident as this time. There's no exaggeration when we say that with their very bodies, they stopped the tanks of the Egyptian and Syrian armies. In the blind, mad hatred of the Arabs to us, they chose Yom Kippur. In the London Times, a military correspondent wrote how foolish they were. This is the one day of the year in Israel when everybody knows exactly where everybody else is. He's not on the road. He's not going to picnics anywhere. There's no transportation of any kind. Even people, private cars, travel on the Sabbath out of feeling of respect for the delicacy of religious feeling for others. You don't see a car on the road. Either people are in the synagogue or they're at home. And this man said, how idiotic the Egyptians and Syrians are. Had they done it on Rosh Hashanah, when about 300, 400,000 Israelis are on the roads from Eilat up to the north, I shuddered to think what would have happened on the roads if that would have happened on one of those days. And I know it has already been described how young men were called out, those on reserves, called out quietly from the synagogues, people looking around, not knowing what was happening, saw one after another leave with the talis, walking into their homes and coming out with their military equipment. We were outnumbered by men and guns and tanks. And the missiles that you remember in 1970 were supposed not to be moved and were. And everybody said we were right, of course. This was a violation of the ceasefire agreement agreed to by the Egyptians. So what? What are you going to do about it? We had a war of attrition. We had a ceasefire. And for 3 years now, the Egyptian army and the Syrian army was very, very well prepared by the Russians and mainly equipped. And by a miracle, I suppose, Russian airlift started immediately to Syria and to Egypt. All right? Planes you can send off quickly. How about boats? Have the Russians some secret method of flying boats into ports, from their ports, from Yugoslav ports? Yugoslavia, the neutral country. Marshal Tito, who thinks that he's the ideal person to mediate between us and the Arab countries because he's neutral. His neutrality consists of having stopped all the railroads in Yugoslavia for civilian passengers or civilian goods. Everything was put at the disposal of carrying arms from Russia through the ports of Yugoslavia to the ports of Egypt and Syria.